Welcome to Global Talk, an international affairs podcast from The National. I'm Justin Vella. On the line is Orlando Crowcroft, a journalist focused on covering the Palestinian territories. Orlando, you've just published a project with us that examines what the Gaza Strip might look like, minus the conflict with Israel. You've looked at different aspects of the territory, including land, fishing, tourism, energy resources, and the possibility of sea and airports, along with the Palestinian people. It paints a picture of what Gaza could be with a stable government and not blockaded by Israel. Given that the latest devastating war with Israel just ended, with more than 2,000 Palestinians killed, it seems like it will be a long time before the possibilities that you sketched out will become a reality. How do we get there?
I would agree with that. Of course, it's a long time and it's a very early stage to be talking about the kind of stuff we were talking about. But I think it's really important to look at just how much there is there in Gaza and what it could be. I mean, and actually it's not that remote when you think about the fact that in 2011 when Hamas had Brotherhood as an ally in Egypt, you know, there was somewhat of an economic boom in Gaza during that year. It was people I speak to in Gaza say that it was really good then, and things were looking really good, and that happened very quickly, which demonstrates, of course, that actually it's not necessarily the government in Palestine which is the Gaza Strip which is the issue. It's the Israeli blockade, which obviously everybody would accept. I mean, that's the key thing that's holding even the smallest part of the possibilities we discussed in this piece is being held back by the blockade on both sides, by the Egyptians and by the Israelis.
And one of the most interesting parts of this project was the possibility that Gaza might reopen its airport. Could you tell us a little bit of the history of the airport, when it was closed, and why its reopening might be one of the last things Israel would like to see?
Well, the airport was very short-lived, as was Palestinian Airlines, which was the Palestinian national airline. But it was basically hasn't been operational since before the Second Intifada. I mean, it's very difficult to see it happening anytime soon. I mean, I read just this morning that Israel are thinking, the Israeli press is reporting that Netanyahu's not going to send a delegation to Cairo, which is where this airport stuff was supposed to be discussed. So, I mean, it just looks like it's miles in the future, to be honest. But it would change everything for Gaza.
How so? I mean, would you expect there to be international flights, or would it be mostly used for humanitarian purposes?
Well, I mean, if you look at the airport before, and actually the Palestinian Airlines, what they were doing before for those brief years when the airport was up and running, I mean, they were flying as far as Istanbul. They're flying to Amman, they're flying to Cairo. I mean, the access for Gazans to get out is obviously huge, but also it's for business to fly in. As anyone who's tried to kind of run the gauntlet at Erez, the Gaza crossing with Israel, you know, it's incredibly difficult. I mean, the idea of being able to fly straight into Rafah or into, which was where the airport was, would be, you know, it would open the door to a whole raft of international and Arab business.
And as you said, Israel might not send a delegation to Cairo to continue talks on this airport. Why do you think that they might push back so heavily against the idea of its reopening?
Well, they just say it was security. I mean, they say they want to control it very closely. I mean, with the amount of weapons that Hamas was able to use in this latest war, I mean, to be honest, I suppose they do have a point. You know, if that amount of arms is getting into the Strip while the blockade is on, then, I mean, you know, if there was an airport, then there'd be no Israeli control over what went in and out of Gaza. So, I mean, you can see why they're against it.
You also say that there are foreign investment possibilities. Why might investors be interested in putting money into Gaza, and when might they see returns?
I think investors, particularly in the Arab world, are always looking for new markets. I mean, we look at the Gulf, how quickly those states grew, how quickly labor was attracted to those states. You know, Egyptians, Palestinians, they all went to the Gulf and they all made money there. You know, Gaza is a huge potential area, but they need everything, and not just in terms of an airport, a port, construction, but in terms of the offshore gas. I mean, that's a massive thing for Gaza and a massive thing for the whole region. You know, people are always jumping on new gas fields and the opportunities in that area, in this part, in the region. So you know, I really think the options are kind of myriad for investors in Gaza. But in terms of returns, obviously, it would have to be, you know, people would have to probably look at the long game. In certain industries, it would probably be easier to make a quick buck, I suppose, like construction, whereas areas such as infrastructure and the offshore gas, you know, that might be a longer term investment.
Do you think it would even be possible to make those investments without a Palestinian state being established?
I don't think so. I don't think there's any chance of the siege being lifted until the PA take over control of the strip from Hamas. I can't see that happening. And given that the Israelis won't even let the West Bank have an airport or have free movement of goods and services, or, you know, all the stuff that they restrict there, the fact that they won't even grant that to Abbas, who is basically, you know, considered by a lot to be a, you know, exceedingly, if not too close to Israel, and, you know, the idea of them approving that kind of stuff in Gaza, it's just not going to happen.
You also discussed tourism. Since you spent quite a bit of time in Gaza, I think, could you describe why the Strip might be a good destination in the future?
Yeah, I mean, that was the one element of the report that really did seem a bit pie in the sky, and I didn't want it to come across as glib, you know what I mean? We shouldn't really be talking about tourism when there's all these awful other challenges. But of course, you know, Gaza is a beautiful stretch of land. I mean, the beach there is pristine. It's got a lot of hotels. A lot of them were built during, again, the boom I was talking about back in 2011 and 12. It has a lot of potential, of course. I imagine that a lot of it would be Palestinian, you know, inter-Palestinian tourism. A lot of West Bank Palestinians would probably love to be able to visit Gaza, you know, see friends and family and travel there. And I imagine you'd have a lot of tourism from Egypt. I'm not sure how much international tourism you'd have. I think the stigma of what's occurred there over the past decade would take time to, you know, persuade international tourists that it was somewhere to come. Although you are seeing a lot bigger numbers coming into the West Bank. I mean, there's kind of something like 4 million a year now go to the West Bank. I think I said in the piece that a lot of that is to Bethlehem and a lot of it's religious tourism. So obviously Gaza doesn't have those same attractions. It's a long way off, isn't it? But it's not impossible to imagine that people would want to come to somewhere like Gaza with its beaches, its great, its very distinct culture, its food. It's got a lot of character.
What steps do you think the international community can take to help make a better future for Gaza?
I mean, a lot of it's just big picture stuff, isn't it? You know, we're going to see what happens at the UN later this month. Whether the international community are going to have to push Israel, if there's ever going to be some movement on this two-state solution, if that's ever going to happen. I mean, I think that Netanyahu saying that he won't send a delegation to Cairo demonstrates the fact that he is happy to see the status quo continue, whereby there's an end to rocket fire, but the siege continues. I mean, he's got his own eye on his own politics. He can't be seen to be too soft on Gaza, particularly after a lot of people on the run see him as kind of losing this latest war. So basically, yeah, I think the push now needs to come from the international community, definitely.
To read more of Orlando's stories and coverage of the Middle East, visit thenational.ae or follow us on Twitter @thenationalrome.